Well, we will read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. The basic textbook of yoga is the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita discusses various types of yoga, including karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga. But at the end of the sixth chapter, Lord Krishna, who is the speaker of the Gita, says, yoginam api sarvesham madgata antaratmana. Of all different types of yogis, the one who worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. In other words, bhakti yoga. And at the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, manmana bhavamad bhakto. Manmana means always think of me. Mad bhakto, become my devotee. Madhyaji, worship me. And mam namaskaru, offer obeisance to me. And Krishna says, if one does that, one will come to him. So we are all spirit souls. Our actual identity is as a spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, who is the Supreme Soul. And somehow we have come into the material world. And the material world is just a fraction of the entire creation of God. The material world is compared to a prison. When you're in the prison and all you know is the prison, it seems very big. But actually, it's small in comparison to what's outside the prison. When you're in the prison, almost everyone else is a prisoner. But the population outside the prison is actually much greater. So the material world is like a prison in which we conditioned souls are confined. And in it, most people are like us. There are few devotees, bhakti yogis, but most people are like ignorant of their actual identities, who they are, where they came from, where they are going. They're just ignorant. And so devotees who have knowledge of the world outside the prison approach the prisoners and tell them that this is not your real life. You are not meant to suffer in the prison of material existence. You're actually meant to be free. Now, be free means to voluntarily obey the laws of God. It's like in the material world, someone in prison is following the laws of the state, but by force. A free person also follows the laws of the state, but voluntarily. So ultimately, we have to serve God directly or indirectly. Indirectly means we're in the prison of material existence and we're forced to suffer. The Bhagavad Gita mentions janma mritu jara vyadi dukha doshan darshanam. That one should always be conscious of the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. But when we are liberated from the prison-like existence, then there's no birth, death, old age, or disease, or any misery at all. You are completely free. So, success in human life really means to become free from material bondage and liberated in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means being conscious of Krishna. As Krishna says, manmana, always think of me. And there are 9 processes of devotional service or bhakti yoga. And the first 3 are most central. First is shravana, which is hearing. Like right now you are engaged in shravana, hearing. And after hearing is kirtana, which means chanting. A little earlier we had some of that beautiful music of chanting responsibly. Chanting and hearing. And after chanting and hearing comes remembering Krishna. So there are various processes of bhakti yoga. But the most central are chanting and hearing. And with chanting and hearing comes remembering. Now, hearing, which is first shravana, actually has different stages. The first is shravana, that's just simple hearing, what we're doing now, hearing. But then there's another stage called manaha, which means reflecting on what you've heard. And then the next stage is applying what you've heard or meditating on what you've heard. So this is the basic sadhana of hearing. And then as devotees, there's a fourth element, which is prayer, that you pray for the teachings to enter your heart. You can pray to the book. You can pray to the author of the book. You can pray to the subject of the book. To be able to understand the truth and apply it and realize it. So that's the Bhagavad Gita. It brings you to the point of bhakti yoga. And then there's a more advanced book called Srimad Bhagavatam. It's also a much longer text. The Bhagavad Gita is 700 verses. And Srimad Bhagavatam is 18,000. So how many times more? Do we have any mathematicians in the group?
30?
Huh?
About 30?
Yeah. Yeah, it's about 25 times longer, 30 times longer. So, I'm going to read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. According to Vedic culture, there are four purusharthas, or four goals in life. Dharma, which means performance of religious activities. Artha, economic development. Kama, fulfillment of material desires. And moksha, liberation. And of all of those, moksha, or liberation, is the most important. But then, there's a fifth panchama purusartha, which is pure love for Krishna. And that's considered higher even than liberation. So I'll read this verse, and it's you'll find it very interesting because it applies directly to you. Actually, you who are in the room fall in different categories. But this verse covers every category, so you're included. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Please repeat. Akama.
Akama.
One who has transcended all material desires.
One who has transcended all material desires.
Sarvakama.
Sarvakama.
One who has the sum total of material desires.
One who has the sum total of material desires.
Va.
Va.
Either.
Either.
Mokshakama.
Mokshakama.
One who desires liberation.
One who desires liberation.
Udarati.
Udarati.
With broader intelligence.
With broader intelligence.
Tivrena.
Tivrena.
With great force.
With great force.
Bhakti yogena.
Bhakti yogena.
By devotional service to the Lord.
By devotional service to the Lord.
Yajeta.
Yajeta.
Should worship.
Should worship.
Purusham.
Purusham.
The Lord.
The Lord.
Param.
Param.
The Supreme Whole.
The Supreme Whole.
Translation. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Please repeat. A person who has broader intelligence,
a person who has broader intelligence,
whether he be full of all material desire,
whether he be full of all material desires,
without any material desire,
without any material desire,
or desiring liberation,
or desiring liberation,
must by all means worship the Supreme Whole,
worship the Supreme Whole,
the Personality of Godhead.
The Personality of Godhead.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Sri Krishna. Is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottama, or the Supreme Personality. It is He only who can award liberation to the impersonalists by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahma Jyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahma Jyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not independent of the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the Supreme Impersonal Brahma Jyoti must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as mentioned here, as recommended here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both karma and karma yoga and jnana yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone who?
Everyone.
Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of bhakti yoga. Even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. Akama is one who has no material desire. A living being who?
A living being.
Yes, a living being is who? Yes. But we that was in the previous sense. Akama is one who has no material desire. A living being, naturally being the part and parcel of the supreme whole, Purusham Purnam, has as his natural function to serve the supreme being. Just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Laura, in your pocket you have a hand. And what is the function of that hand?
Touch things and things.
Yeah. Under whose direction? Yeah, under your direction. So in other words, your hand is meant to serve you. It's meant to do what you tell it to do. Because it's part of you. So we are part and parcel of Krishna, so we're meant to do what Krishna wants us to do. No, we're meant to serve Krishna. Yes. A living being, naturally being the part and parcel of the supreme whole, has as his natural function to serve the supreme being. Just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desirelessness means, therefore, not to be inert like the stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position. And thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as bhajaniya parama purusha sukha matra sasukhatvam in his treatise Sandarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Lord. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world. And such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy. All right, let's go one by one. What is altruism? Yes, doing things for others. Philanthropy.
Giving like money to charitable causes and stuff, and like helping the poor.
Yeah, philanthropy means giving to others. Charity. Socialism.
The idea we should share everything.
Mm-hmm. Communism.
Everyone should be provided for.
Yeah, it's from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. It's similar to socialism. So now, what Srila Prabhupada is saying here is that in the ultimate sense, because we are all part and parcel of Krishna, we will experience happiness only in relation to Krishna. Like there is a story in India that the limbs of the body thought, you know, we're doing all the work, earning money, buying food, cooking, eating, and the stomach is getting everything. So we should go on strike. So all the different limbs of the body went on strike. But what happened is that all the limbs of the body became weaker and weaker. And then they decided that we were doing better when we were serving the stomach. So Krishna is like the stomach of existence. And by serving Krishna, we benefit. And by not serving Krishna, we suffer. So that's our natural function, to serve Krishna. Like the natural function of the hand is to serve the body or serve the stomach. And if the hand is not serving the stomach, there's something wrong with it. It's diseased, paralyzed, or diseased somehow. So if we are not serving Krishna, we're in a diseased condition. So these different manifestations, such as altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, are manifestations of the soul's desire to serve others. But that desire to serve is perfectly and completely fulfilled only in relation to Krishna, who is the supreme whole. And it is imperfectly expressed in altruism, philanthropy, and so on within the material world. So such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc. What is etc.? What is etc.? What is etc.? Yeah, and so on. Yeah. Hmm. by, so it's expressed in altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc., by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. Not you all. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. So it's sort of like a reflection of the real happiness that we feel when we render service to the Lord to make Him happy. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Vrajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. What is a damsel?
A lady.
Yes, a lady. A lady. And Vrajabhumi, what is Vrajabhumi? So, you asked about sort of like the map of creation. So we are in the material world, and beyond the material world is the spiritual sky. The material world is like a prison, and in terms of the whole cosmology, the material world is like a cloud in the spiritual sky. And within the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets. Just like in the material sky, there are material planets. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and so on. So within the spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets. And on the spiritual planets, on the Supreme Lord in one of His forms presides. But even within the spiritual planets, there are gradations, and the topmost of the spiritual planets is Krishna Loka, the planet of Krishna. And even in Krishna Loka, there are three sections which also have their gradations. Mathura, Dwarka, and Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is the highest. And another name for Vrindavan is Vraja. Vrajabhumi. So the love of the gopis, the damsels of Vrindavan, for Krishna is the most pure, and therefore it gives Krishna the greatest happiness. And because the devotee experiences happiness in relation to Krishna, it also gives the devotee the greatest happiness. The gopis loved the Lord without any return. And this is the perfect exhibition of the akama spirit. Kama means desire, and akama means without desire. Without desire means without material desire. But it includes, or in the highest sense, it means the desire to make Krishna happy. And in that process, one experiences happiness, the greatest happiness. The kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, whereas the spirit of akama is fully exhibited. Where is that spirit of akama, of just wanting to please Krishna? Where is that exhibited? The kama spirit of selfishness is exhibited in the material world, and the akama spirit of desiring only to please Krishna is exhibited where? In the spiritual world. In fact, wherever devotees gather in the mood of pleasing Krishna, that is the spiritual world. I mean, it does exist as a geographical place, but it can be experienced anywhere. And that's the idea of the temple. In the temple, everything should be done for the pleasure of Krishna. And if everyone cooperates for the pleasure of Krishna, then it's the same experience as the spiritual world. And just like all the different parts of the body, all the different limbs, they work cooperatively. Similarly, all the devotees work cooperatively for the pleasure of Krishna. You don't have the right hand fighting with the left hand. They all work together. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord, or being merged in the Brahma Jyoti, can also be exhibitions of the kama spirit if they are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from the material desires. We mentioned dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So kama, that desire to enjoy for oneself, always ends in frustration. Recently, I saw a saying that the greatest obstacle to the pursuit of happiness is the pursuit of happiness. So, kama, that desire to enjoy for oneself, always results in frustration and disappointment. And then the reaction to that is the desire for moksha, to be released from that bondage, liberated from that bondage. But there is something higher, and that is pure love. Panchama Purusharthaṁ. Pure love for Krishna. Akama. That is not the desire for selfish gratification, and it's not the selfish desire for release from the frustration that comes from the pursuit of material happiness. But it's in a different category, completely different category, and it's our constitutional position as parts and parcels of Krishna, to serve Him and make Him happy. And when He's satisfied, then we are automatically satisfied and happy. A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, a pure devotee is aspirant. What does aspirant mean? What does aspire mean? You probably said it right, I just didn't hear.
Striving for it?
Yes. Yes. Aspire means like, yeah, you want it. Hope for it. Work towards it. So a pure devotee aspires for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. How many of you have at least looked at the Bhagavad Gita, read a little of the Bhagavad Gita? So you know the Bhagavad Gita was spoken on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna was declining to fight because he didn't want to have to kill his relatives, which might seem like a nice thing, but his real motive was that his relatives should remain alive so that he could enjoy life with them. In other words, it was a selfish desire. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instruction of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his primary duty. Thus he became a kama. That is the perfect stage of a perfect living being. So one of my godbrother Guru Bhai means a disciple of the same Guru. So he was, his service to Krishna was, he was acting as the cook in Juhu, Bombay, at a time when we didn't have a temple, really. We just had a very makeshift arrangement. And it was very, very hot in Bombay. And on top of the heat, he was cooking on the fire. We didn't have the stoves like people in America and other places, but he would literally make a fire. And he was like so hot and so exhausted, like he was just struggling to be able to push himself through that ordeal of cooking. And then after somehow managing to get through that meal. He came into the sort of hut where we were living, and he saw a picture of Krishna, and he thought, what's the matter with me? You know, I'm just thinking of myself. You know, here's Krishna. He's also in the same heat, so I should do something for him. And so there, I think, anyway, he picked up something that he used as a fan. And he started to fan Krishna. And by fanning Krishna, he himself became completely relieved from his heat and exhaustion. And this is a practical example from his experience. That if we give up our selfish concerns and just work to make Krishna happy, then all of our problems are solved. Udaradi means one who has a broader outlook. Earlier we mentioned how in the Bhagavad Gita there are different processes of yoga mentioned, and then how Krishna, who is the supreme authority, says that bhakti yoga is the highest. So here in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a discussion of different demigods. Like, if you want this, you should worship this one. If you want that, you should worship that one. And at the end of the list comes this statement, that whether you are free from desire or full of material desires or desire liberation, if you have broader intelligence, you should worship Krishna, who is the supreme whole. That means there's no need to worship demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, so many demigods, but you just worship Krishna. Udaradi means one who has a broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods. And such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 7:20 as Hrita Jnana, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. One cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with the desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly. And everyone, whether akama or sakama or mokshakama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana. As the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra, Similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, etc. may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. So this tivrena, which means with great force, is the key. And with great force means without mixing bhakti yoga with karma yoga, jnana yoga, or astanga yoga, because those other processes are weaker. And adding them to bhakti yoga weakens one's practice. So tivrena, by great force, means pure bhakti, without mixing these weaker processes. So if one engages in bhakti yoga with great force, one will get the happiness that one is looking for, and one will ultimately achieve pure love of Godhead, which is the ultimate goal. So I will tell one story that illustrates this principle. There was once a king named Uttanapad. He was actually, he had a very big kingdom, and he had two co-wives. And one day, the son of one of those co-wives was playing on his lap when he was sitting on the throne. And the other co-wife objected that you cannot sit on the throne because you were not born from my womb. And the king, although it was his natural instinct to play with his son, but because he was overly attached to that particular co-wife, he didn't allow his son Dhruva to stay on his lap. And so Dhruva was very upset, and he went to his mother and told her what happened, that his stepmother said, you know, you cannot sit on the throne because you're not born from my womb. And you know, he wanted his kingdom, and so he asked his mother what to do. So she said, you know, unfortunately, your father, the king, favors his other wife, so I cannot do anything. So then Dhruva asked, well, who can help me? And she said, only God can help you. And where do I find God? He was just this young boy of 5 years. Gandharvika, how old are you?
10.
Can you stand up? This is Gandharvika. She sings very beautifully. Her whole family is very musical. And she's 10 years old. And Dhruva was 5 years old. That means half of her age. Thank you. 5 years old. So his mother said, only God can help you. And Dhruva said, where can I find God? And she said, well, I don't know, but many sages and saintly persons, they go to the forest to find God. So he left home at the age of 5 and went to the forest, to the jungle. And he was looking for God in his own way as a 5-year-old boy, looking behind the trees, looking under the rocks, looking under the logs, just everywhere. Now, God, Krishna, is in everyone's heart. So he knows the desire of every living entity. And he knew that this boy, Dhruva, is very sincere to find me. And so he sent a guru, Narada Muni, to Dhruva. From within the heart of Narada Muni, he inspired him that you go to the forest and you will find this boy, and he is very eager to reach me. So Narada went into that forest and found Dhruva, and he tested him, because sometimes the spiritual master will test the disciple. So he tested him, and he said, you know, Dhruva, you are only 5 years old. You shouldn't be taking things so seriously. You should go home and you should just play and have fun like the other children of your age. And Dhruva replied that, if you can help me find God, I will be very happy. But if you want to tell me to go home, then you should go home. So he showed his determination, and like he passed the test of his spiritual master, and then his spiritual master instructed him to chant the holy names and to follow different prescriptions, which Dhruva did exactly. They were not easy instructions to follow, but because he had faith in his guru and he was eager to achieve the result of God so that he could get his kingdom, so he followed the instructions. And he followed the instructions with such force and such a purity and such adherence that eventually, after about 6 months, God came. And Dhruva Maharaj was overwhelmed with transcendental ecstasy of pure love. And although he was just a small boy, the Lord touched him on his head. And being touched by the Lord on his head, he was blessed with the ability to express his appreciation for the Lord in beautiful prayers that would ordinarily be beyond the capacity of a 5-year-old boy. So in the end, the Lord asked him, you know, I'm very pleased with you. Now, what can I give you? I'm ready to give you whatever you want. I'm ready to fulfill whatever desire you have. And Dhruva replied, I do not want anything. And the Lord responded, But what about your kingdom? You came to the forest to find me so that you could get your kingdom. What about your kingdom? And Dhruva replied that that kingdom was like a piece of broken glass compared to you, who are like the most valuable jewel. So I am a million times more satisfied, and I do not want anything else. Swamin kritarthosmi varam nayache. I am fully satisfied and I do not want any benediction. So this is an example that although he began with a material desire, but because he engaged in bhakti yoga with force, full force and faith, he was ultimately freed from his material desire and situated in pure devotional service. So that is the great value of Krishna consciousness, that when one has Krishna consciousness, he's so satisfied that he doesn't desire anything else. Once Alexander the Great, who knows who is Alexander the Great? Yes, who?
Plato's.
Yes, he was Greek. That's true. And what else about him? Alexander the Great.
Philosopher, conqueror.
Yes, he conquered everywhere he went. He conquered everywhere. So in his conquering, he came to the precincts of India. And there was a yogi sitting in meditation, doing austerities. And it was very hot. And so Alexander the Great was so impressed that he got down from, I guess, his horse or his chariot. And he approached the yogi and he said, I'm Alexander the Great, the conqueror of the world. And I'm very impressed with you and I'm ready to give you whatever you want. Just ask me whatever you want. And the yogi replied, I have only one thing to ask of you. Please move to the side because you're blocking the sunlight. And that sunlight was hot. That was an austerity. But he was so satisfied with his spiritual practice. He didn't want anything from Alexander the Great. He just didn't want to be disturbed in his practice. So when one gets Krishna consciousness or spiritual consciousness, one is fully satisfied. He doesn't want anything else. And so even if you begin with desires, most people in the beginning, they do have desires because they don't know about Krishna and love for Krishna. So they may have material desires or desires to become released from material bondage. But when they learn about bhakti yoga, and if they practice bhakti yoga with great force without mixing it with other weaker processes, then they become akama. That means free from any selfish desire, and they desire only Krishna and Krishna's satisfaction. And that brings them the highest satisfaction and bliss. And the easiest process, well, chanting and hearing is easy, but the easiest is the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, do you have any questions or comments? Yes?
I find that sometimes, you know, I just get really, I guess, almost distracted. Like, I'll be really, really devoted with all my heart, and then for like a week or a month or something, I'll like kind of get distracted and not, I guess, care as much, and then I get back on it again.
Well, that is the mind. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the mind can be one's best friend or one's worst enemy. When the mind is thinking of Krishna and how to serve Krishna and how to please Krishna, it is your best friend. But when your mind tries to take you away from Krishna, like that envious attitude we discussed, you know, we're working and giving everything to the stomach, why should the stomach enjoy? We want to enjoy. So when that envious attitude comes, then the mind is acting as our worst enemy. And every conditioned soul is in the material world because of envy of Krishna. If we were not envious of Krishna, we would not be in the material world. Even people who are not, well, most people are not conscious that they're envious of Krishna, but they are, and that's why they're here. So, the Bhagavad Gita says that we have to control the lower self with the higher self. So when your mind tells you, you know, why should you be spending your time chanting Hare Krishna and serving Krishna, you could be whatever, then your higher self, you know, has to control your lower self and say, no, mind, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this. And association is a very powerful factor. If you associate with devotees, then by the association of devotees, you will be carried along in the practice of bhakti yoga. And, you know, man is a social animal. So if he doesn't associate with devotees, he'll be associating with other people who are not devotees and who are engaged in different types of materialistic pursuits. And so that association will tend to pull you in that direction. So association is extremely important. And that's why Srila Prabhupada formed the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. To be successful in any pursuit, you benefit from association. Say, like business people, they have a chamber of commerce. And, you know, by joining the Chamber of Commerce, they feel their business will flourish more. So we also have our association. And through that association, our business of Krishna consciousness will flourish more.
Thank you.
Good question. Yes?
You're kind of piggybacking off his question about, like, whenever you feel like you should be here and you're, like, really in it, and those days that you're, like, I don't know if I want to go. Like, is it better to come on those days when you feel like you shouldn't go? Or is it better to stay home because your heart's not in it? Because I know I go through fluctuating, like, just because of the way my life is, I get really bogged down with all the tasks that I have going on, and sometimes it can be exhausting to think about coming to the temple and chanting. Even though I love doing those things, sometimes, like, making that effort can feel exhausting. And so, in those times when I feel exhausted, like, is it good to come? Or is, like, Krishna like, maybe you should stay home and wait till your heart's in it?
Well, stay home and do what?
I mean, you know, I have my own forms of, like, devotee and devotion at home that I can do, I guess, but I see your point.
Yeah. But I mean, it would be good because it's, say, if you're talking about Wednesday evening, it's just one day a week. And it would be good to try to plan your day in such a way that you're not too exhausted at the end of the day. You know, it's something like you're looking forward to it and you want to be in your best form for it. And so try to, you know, plan in advance so that you're in the best shape you can be in when the time comes. But yeah, you'd be surprised that sometimes when doing something Krishna conscious comes at the cost of our sort of material comfort or satisfaction, sometimes the result is even greater, you know, because Krishna saw you made that sacrifice, even though you were tired, but you made that sacrifice, and so he may give you an extra reward.
It's a good way to look at it. Mm-hmm.
Because Krishna is a person, he's not just an abstract concept. And yeah, he has feelings and he sees when you're making an effort. And he appreciates it. And you know, sometimes it works the other way. We may do something not Krishna conscious, and then we just get entangled in it. And then, like, how did that happen? How did I get into this? And I mean, I just wasted so much time. And it's sort of like the opposite experience that doesn't turn out the way you hoped it would. So yeah, but I think it's worth making the effort and planning. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
I'm a little bit confused about the part of desire.
Yes.
Because we might not desire like extreme things in the material aspects, like a huge mansion, but nobody wants to live in the streets or suffer hunger or those kind of things. So I guess my question is, if you have material desires that can be seen through the eyes of Krishna, is that possible? Is there like some sort of balance that can be found there?
Well, we have to know what is material and what is spiritual. And basically, anything done for Krishna is spiritual. And anything done for yourself without Krishna is material. So we also eat. But what is the goal? The goal is to get energy and strength to serve Krishna. And of course, the food we eat is offered to Krishna. So it's prasad. You know about prasad. So that's not material. So, and same thing with the residence. What are you going to do in your place of residence? If your activities are dedicated to Krishna, then that residence is a facility for your service to Krishna. Then it's not material. But if in your home you're engaging in material activities, then that endeavor to get a home and earn the money to maintain the household is material. So it's not so much the activity per se that determines if it's material or spiritual, but it's the intention, it's the purpose, it's the consciousness. So if the goal of your life is to become Krishna conscious and you're working so that you can live, and by living engage in Krishna consciousness, then it's not material. Or to the extent that you do it for Krishna, it's spiritual, and to the extent that you do it for sense gratification, it's material.
Can you be a little bit explained, like the, probably going to pronounce it wrong, but like the deities?
Yes, yes, yes.
That if you see it in, like, with only with your eyes, it's something made of matter, of molecules, but for devotees, it's just more than that. It's not only that, because I think it's like a reminder of Krishna, so it gets a higher meaning. So would it have, can it be explained a little bit like the same way? Like, it doesn't matter if it's a house, it doesn't matter if it's a whatever the material thing we're talking about, as long as it's got a purpose oriented with Krishna's desires.
Yes. Well, what's the difference between a house and a temple? A house is made of bricks and stones, and a temple is made of bricks and stones. But in the temple, the central point is Krishna, and everyone is cooperating for the service of Krishna. Now, if in your home the central point is Krishna, then your home is as good as a temple. So again, it's the consciousness. It's the focus. But that takes association, coming to the temple and associating with devotees and getting strength and inspiration for your practices at home. But what you said is true. One should live moderately. You know, not too much, not too little, but just enough to facilitate one's service to Krishna. That's correct. Hare Krishna.